AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I am your host, Damian Martinez, along with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And today we'll be talking about the 2012 movie, The Possession, starring, I forgot his name again.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan,
sorry. I apologize for that.
And Kira Sedgwick. Can't forget Kira Sedgwick. She was another one of those A-list toppers right there on this.
Yes, and this movie, probably one of my favorite supernatural movies there is. I love the eeriness. I love the spookiness of it all, the mystery of this kind of thing possessing the daughter in this movie. And of course, this movie is based off of a blog post, pretty much. Yep. Of what's her name? Leslie Gornstein, I believe is her name. I could be saying that wrong. But it followed a pretty much box that was for scrolls, I believe.
Yep, the Dybbuk box.
Yes, and it was a little cabinet, pretty much. And it brought bad luck to people that owned it. And it went through, several hands and ended up being taken in by a museum that now has it on display.
Yeah, Zach Biggins from the Ghost Adventures currently owns it, and so it's on display at his museum in Vegas, actually. Yeah, and he bought it from the last known owner was Kevin Manis, and he's actually the one who coined the term Dybbuk box. Nobody had ever called it a Dybbuk box before. Ah. And so he coined that, and he actually, there's a bet out there that he actually instilled that essentially, if you could find the term Dybbuk box on anything before his 2003 eBay post to actually buy the item, then he will actually give you $100,000 and tattoo your name on his forehead. Because he's like that hardcore convinced that he is like the king and the creator of the lore of the Dybbuk box.
He could be. I mean, I haven't heard it before. Well, one, this before this movie, but before his post. So
I've heard certain things of like certain curse items coming out of the Jewish community growing up, in Los Angeles with a large Hasidic community and, Orthodox Jews. There's always little mutterings and little side stories, but nobody ever confirms or claims them. So I had never heard anything coined as, there's certain Hebrew lore and Jewish lore like the Goyim and the protector and stuff like that. And, that there are certain pieces, but Dybbuk box, I had never heard of. And so, this movie definitely, opened my eyes to this story.
Yeah. And actually, kind of plays on that, things you find at not, estate sales, yard sales, stuff like that. You never know what you're taking home with you.
No, you
besides
don't.
Besides the item you purchase, you are taking a lot more.
Yes.
I know you have a couple of things.
Oh, I have several several cursed items. And and I've actually had a couple others that I no longer have and possess that I've come across in this lifetime. But my wife definitely lets me know that if there's some cursed piece of garbage out there, I'm going to be the one to find it, everybody.
So. Yeah, but you're not allowed to own it.
No.
Or at least with her knowledge.
Yeah, it somehow lives in the house, but it's not well known.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of just kept somewhere safe.
Yeah.
From Well, you're Kate Sid from It. The other way around. So yeah, this movie, I mean, it's just great. It still holds up today. I think it still holds up today. I really loved it. If you've never seen this, go check it out. I believe it was on, oh my gosh.
I watched it on Peacock.
Yeah, it's on Peacock.
Yeah, it's on Peacock right now. You can, right now. You can watch it for free. I think it's $3.99 if you have Prime.
Yeah.
So
we'll do a little horror movie night. I mean, this is a perfect movie for if you go to estate sales and you try to look for treasures and this and that. This will make you think twice, I believe. And let's get into the summary. When their youngest daughter, Emily, becomes strangely obsessed with an antique wooden box bought from a yard sale, parents Clyde and Stephanie see little cause for alarm. However, Em becomes increasingly unstable, leading to the couple to fear the presence of a malevolent force. To their horror, they learn that the box contains a Dybbuk, a dislocated spirit that inhabits and ultimately devours human hosts. Em's father teams up with his ex-wife to find a way to end the curse upon their child. And that's pretty much, I mean, the whole movie. I mean,
yeah,
there's like so much into it, especially with the, it starts off with actually showing the kind of the spook, I guess you could say, of the movie, being the Dybbuk box and the woman who first owns it before it's sold off to the little girl. And it's talking to her in Polish.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much saying that it was going to eat her heart, I believe, or take her heart.
Take her heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she ends up having a stroke.
Yeah.
And being thrown around.
Oh, yeah. You'd have a stroke, too, if you got thrown across the room into a brick fireplace. I mean, we're
and
all
ultimately landing in a glass table.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's how it starts. And the voice from the box, man, that's... Yeah. Creepy. Whoever did the voice for that, they spot on with the creepiness, because, oh man, chills.
Yeah.
Just watching it again, it still gives me chills. So, yeah, you're first shown the spirit, and then you get kind of shown the life of Clyde, you know, who he is, a divorced father, having dual custody with his ex-wife, who is not my favorite person in this movie.
No. Well, she's not as bad as, you know, she's not as bad as Brett. Brett is the mom's new love interest, and the Dybbuk box kind of takes care of him in the end.
Which I love.
I love the fact that, like, literally, like, the Dybbuk box takes care of him in the end, and there's no reference to it. Like, because it's just great. Like, just, you know, the Dybbuk box, essentially, it holds pieces that Polish Jews were trying to hide from the Nazis.
Yeah.
Is the assumption that you get from it if you read into it. And so there's like a ring.
There's a ring, yeah.
There's a ring in one little thing. There's like a skeletal bird in one.
Yeah.
And there's a tooth, like a large human tooth.
Yeah.
And Brett, who is the mother's love interest, happens to be a dentist.
Yeah.
So when M comes to the house and has the box with her.
Yeah, and she's already starting to get possessed.
She's already like 3/4 ways possessed.
Yeah.
And he notices that she has something in her hand and he asks to see it. Well, it happens to be like a human tooth. And that was probably one of the best scenes ever. And like I said, the fact that, you know, in the end, Brett ends up essentially the Dybbuk attacks Brett and all of his teeth fall out.
Yes.
And it's like no cares given. No one gives a crap what happened to Brett. Like, he's just like in the front yard and like he drives away and they're just like, please. Like,
yeah, because they were going to take her
to a
therapist, I believe, because they thought, you know.
Yeah, they thought therapy would help, you know, demonic possession.
That's why she was lashing out. That's why she was acting out, because, you know, everything that was going on. And that's what I like. So when she purchases this box, obviously she's attracted to it to begin with. Or maybe it to her. And it has to do with all of the negativity surrounding her. You know, the divorce going on between the mom and dad and the tension there. The tension between the father and the daughter. And then, you know, this relationships in general, it's a whole kind of negative scenario going on. Which pretty much this Dybbuk is feeding off of.
Yeah.
And is actually stronger, you know, once she gets possession of it, I think.
Yeah.
And is able to take full possession of her and enter her and start working its thing.
Yeah, and so it's essentially it's the Dybbuk box. When you watch it, it's kind of like it's a puzzle box, much like Hellraiser.
Yeah.
So you have to basically move certain pieces because...
Because it's meant to not be open.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be open. It doesn't have a key. It doesn't have an opening. It's not hinged to be open. So, of course, with the spirit working through M, it kind of shows her how to open the box.
Yeah.
So the box opens. And then what I liked about it is it really kind of pulled and compared itself to a lot of different movies that I've seen in the past. Obviously, Hellraiser with the box.
Yeah.
The fact that the demon's, you know, entrapped within the box. Then the fact that there are moths that come out of the box.
Yeah.
And that was very, you know, that was very Amityville.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Amityville and The Exorcist, you know. Exorcist especially had the flies.
Yes.
All the flies.
Exorcist especially.
Yeah, well, this one comes in and it moves moths.
Yeah.
And so she opens the box at her dad's house while she's spending the weekend there. And there's just moths. Like, everywhere.
Yeah.
They fill up the whole room.
Which I was talking to my girl about it. We actually had this happen in our house. So when the summer would hit, I believe it was the summer, there would just be a huge, just, like, plague of moths, pretty much, in our kid. We live in an old house. And, yeah, like, literally, they would just be all over the wall. They would fly around the ceiling fan. Like, it was horrible, like, at night. I mean, we're not at night. It was pretty better because once you turn off all the lights, they would calm down. But once like daytime hit and you had the lights on or whatever, it looked just like that scene where they're just like flying everywhere.
Yeah,
and that was a hard time. Luckily, you know, they went away for some reason. I don't know what was going on. Now looking back at it from that scene. Maybe there was something going on around us.
Possible.
That could have attracted that. Yeah. Spiritually or, you know, supernaturally. Looking back at it. Or it just could just have been like, you know, just kind of the right mixture of stuff, you know, led them there. But after watching that scene again, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe that's why.
There were all those moths at our old house. And yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. It's good. But yeah, it's got, you know. It's got the insect plagues, which is biblical in nature, obviously. The plagues of locusts, and so the moths kind of come into play. So the dad and the sister kind of witness this, and they're like, you know, they notice M's attitude is totally changing. She's an animal rights advocate. She doesn't eat meat. She's a vegan.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. And then she just becomes like this power hound. Like, she just starts eating everything.
Yeah.
Just consuming at all times. And so that's off-putting to the dad. So the dad's kind of getting the feel, hey, there's something not right with M. But nobody else, you know, everybody else is kind of playing it off on the fact of, hey, we're getting a divorce.
As much crap as his ex-wife gives him, he's the only one that's actually concerned for his daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the one that's really looking into things because they're really, dad kind of takes a spiritual standpoint from jump. Mom's kind of like, oh, well, we'll just take Emma to therapy and she'll get diagnosed and, you know, they'll put her on Zoloft and she'll be okay. And dad's just like, oh, no, I think there's something else. So dad kind of reads in between the lines.
Yeah.
And so dad figures out, you know, he actually, you know, he breaks the trust of his daughter and he breaks into the room while she's gone and he opens the box.
Yeah.
When he opens the box, he sees like the 7 deadly gifts or whatever the hell are inside this thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, this is not normal. So he goes through and automatically he goes the spiritual route with it. So he sees that, you know, the exterior of the box has Hebrew engraved in it.
Yeah.
So he is figuring that it's, you know, of a Hebrew nature. So he goes through and he starts reading books of Hebrew lore. And that's kind of where he gets his first, you know, his first example. So he actually goes and he gets... the book that he actually brings in is the Masorah, which is the art scroll edition of the Tanakh or the Torah, which is the Old Testament.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And so he goes through and he brings that in. So he's automatically taking the like Hasidic Jewish high ground to attack this.
And he wants to see if this is really what it is, you know? After he discovers, I think, is it after he discovers it's a Dybbuk box when he takes it to the professor?
Yeah, he takes it to a friend of his that works at the college because...
Yeah.
Kind of an ad subtext, but he's a high school, or no, he's a college basketball coach.
Yeah.
And so obviously he's got people in the, you know, in the academic departments that he goes and gets the advice from that, that this Dybbuk box is essentially, you know, it encases a demon. Mm. And it's got a mirror on the inside so that the demon has to look back on itself. This guy's got like tons of lore and, you know, knowledge on this thing. But there's no way to stop it once it's out, according to him.
Yeah. It's like Pandora's box.
Yeah. Just like Pandora's box.
Yeah.
So it's opened up and now he knows essentially what he's got to do. But his daughter is now starting to manipulate the situation. The demon within her is starting to go through and really like pull against him.
Yeah.
Saying that like he's abusing her. She's slapping the hell out of herself and saying that dad did it.
And that part I did like where it tries to make it look like he slapped her. You could see the fingerprints in her face.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. Like when she's getting slapped, like you can see the impression.
See that like something made contact with her face. And then obviously dad becomes public enemy number one.
Yeah.
You know, mom's going to take the kid away from dad. He's not getting weekend visitation no more.
Yeah.
Because he just smacked the hell out of his kid. And the sister was behind him, so she didn't see dad not making contact.
Yeah.
So she automatically believes that, like, dad just smacked the shit out of Emma. And, you know, now I don't want to be around dad either. So dad's losing everything. So that's when, just like most people in jail in bad situations, you automatically turn to God. So dad goes and he knows that this is Heber somehow.
Oh, yeah.
So they're only, I don't know if it takes place in Virginia or where exactly it takes place. But
it's in Michigan.
It's in Michigan?
I believe it's in Michigan.
They're not too far from New York. And New York has a huge Hasidic community.
I believe it's in Michigan.
Yeah. So dad throws the box in the back of the car and goes out to, you know, basically find a Hebrew scholar who knows exactly what the hell this thing is. So he contacts the character is Sadalk, and he contacts him online, I believe, and makes an appointment to meet with him. So for some odd reason, he happens to go on the Sabbath, which is Friday afternoon. If you're not familiar with Hebrew studies, Friday afternoon until Saturday afternoon, you aren't allowed to do anything. So I'm not sure how exactly or why exactly he showed up at that time, because nobody could really help him. But Sadot is not really, you know, he's not really convinced to, you know, partake of the Sabbath.
Yeah, he's not really fully.
No, he's not committed. Fully involved. He's kind of like a free agent.
Yeah.
So he takes the father to go meet his father.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're obviously doing prayers. So the minute that the elders of the community see the Dybbuk box, they're like, oh, man, like, did you open it? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, well, you're screwed.
Yeah, you're,
like, you're done. Like, yeah. There's nothing we can do for you. So, but that being said, Sadat decides that he is going to help. So he goes to help. Now, little side note on that. Sadat is played by the early 2000s reggae MC Matetyahu. It's actually his film debut. So he's there, and anyone like, I mean, that's of my age range. When I saw Matetyahu, I was like, oh, dude, I kind of geeked out a little bit. I'm not going to lie. So, you know, Matetyahu, he's a bad man. He's going to, like, take care of business.
Yeah,
you know?
he's there for you. Yeah, he's got your bet.
Yeah. So he goes through, and they set out. They're going to help. Well, by this time, obviously, the father doesn't have custody anymore.
Yeah.
So the mom's taking the, you know, the let's go take her for an MRI. Let's take her for a CAT scan. And that's not really going to help against, you know, a Hebrew demon.
Yeah.
Just not going to happen.
Which, they, when they're doing it, you could see the demon, you know, kind of.
That was a cool effect.
And that was pretty cool.
I really like that because everybody kind of gets a glimpse that there's like this contorted little evil grimacing worm inside of like her breastplate. And everyone's like, there's something in there. And it's like looking at you and it's like moving around.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was done very well. So.
Yeah, Yeah, everything they did was done really well. It was like, I don't know, it was just, you had the mirror scene where she's looking at every little item in the box and her reflection from what the dad can see, it's like contorted. It's, you know, just, it looks messed up. You can tell. That was done really well, too. So yeah, the finger scene, so where she's looking down her, she feels something inside of her, obviously, that wants to come out. She looks in her throat, and then the fingers in her mouth. Dude, that's creepy. Yeah. That right there is... That's, yeah. But, okay, and this could just be like a wild theory. So, when she's looking in the mirror before she checks her mouth, so she has the tub filling up. And then at the end of that scene, that tub's full.
Yeah.
Could that be like loss of time on her part? Because a lot of possessions, like...
When it could be, yeah, definitely. Because it's like totally up... Like, when it starts, she kind of like it just started filling up the tub. And then you turn around and it's like all the way to the rim.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, it doesn't really reference it anywhere that I've seen, but yeah, definitely. I mean, it
could be. That's just my theory. Yeah. I mean, it's just a long shot. I mean, I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of stories where people have, like, loss of time. They lose hours, days, and I'm just like, maybe that's kind of part of it. Maybe she lost a couple of minutes or,
yeah,
that, you know.
I've heard lots of stories like that from true, like, paranormal things, out here.
I can imagine.
Yeah, so it definitely could be.
Yeah.
So now we got Modest Yahoo.
Yeah, and he's helping out.
He's gonna, you know, he's signing on to help him out. So they obviously go to the hospital because that's where they know that the daughter's at.
Yeah.
Because mom and them have taken her to the hospital. So she's there getting a CAT scan, and that's when they see, you know, within her, and they see the face and everything. So now mom's becoming a believer. Mom's like, hey,
yeah,
maybe, you know, there's some merit to what all these people are saying, that essentially she is somewhat possessed. So Dad Modest Yahoo show back up, and they've got to get her someplace because they're going to pull this exorcism. And they've got to get her someplace quiet because they can't do it up in the main offices because all the doctors are there and they're walking around. So the dad, having worked at the university, he's like, hey, there's a physical therapy room down in the basement and nobody goes there after 6. So let's go down there. So they all rally down and they go down and they set up for, you know, this is the time they're going to go through, they're going to do it. So they start essentially the incantation and they start going at it, and they're, you know, they're extracting the demon. They're asking the demon to name itself.
Yeah.
Because that's like one of the ways that
he sees it when he breaks the mirror all the way to the hospital. He sees the name Abizu, which is Eater of Children.
Yes.
And so that's why he knows, you know, the name of it. He has to say the name so it can come out.
Yeah.
And the daughter fights back, obviously, and overpowers them and runs into a different area of the physical therapy, probably downstairs.
Pretty much.
And she pretty much is standing in, like, the middle of the room, no lights. And she keeps repeating the same thing over, which is the... Daddy, you're scaring me.
Yeah, because her dad's in hot pursuit.
So unsettling. Just like the repeat of the same words.
Yeah.
And then finally it turns demonic. Same words, but just demonic. And then she attacks her dad. And then finally he takes her back to everybody else. And then they do a whole, pretty much, the redoing the seance.
Yeah.
And lights go out, come back on, and he's holding his daughter. But,
and through the whole thing, he's been essentially telling the demon to take him, not her.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to basically get the demon to take possession of him and give his daughter freedom. So the lights come back on, and the father and the child are, like, clutched. They're, like, permanent. And the daughter starts crying. And lo and behold, they break the two apart. They get the girl. They make sure she's okay. Emma's totally returned to being herself.
Yeah.
She's fully cognizant of what's going on.
But Clyde
has now become the...
Possessed, yeah.
The host. He is, you know, he is possessed by the demon. And once again, Modest Yahoo kicks into business.
Yeah.
And he starts calling out the demon's name and chanting at the demon. And essentially forcing the demon to give up control.
Yeah.
So the demon, you know, gets... You know, there's kind of the good versus evil battle, which exists in almost every paranormal, you know, poltergeist, no matter what you're watching, it's going to happen. So, of course, the grip is broken and the demon is cast back into the Dybbuk box.
Yeah, and it comes out of his mouth and Dude, it looked creepy. CGI, that's the only thing I was disappointed about, was a little bit of the CGI was kind of, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of campy in certain areas. Yeah. Like certain things, like you were saying, like, you know, the little fingers in the mouth and stuff. Those were actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff was just kind of like, you know.
Yeah, the demon itself, I think they should have done more practical.
Yeah.
You know, at least, yeah, coming out of the mouth, yeah, of course, you have to kind of do CGI if you want to.
Or they could have used a reference that they used somewhere earlier in the movie to actually, like, get a visual. Like, they could have, you know, given kind of a spoiler throughout the film that this is how, you know, I mean, even like a, you know, a Necronomicon sketch drawing of what the demon's supposed to look like.
You had the reflection of the with the daughter.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew what it looked like.
It was somewhat alluded to, but I don't think it was done well enough to where,
yeah,
in the end, when it comes out, and that was one thing I was kind of disappointed with, was, yeah, you know, it felt like, you know, like a couple movies we've done before, it felt kind of hurried. It felt like, you, yeah, know, we didn't really want to take the time, and so we went through, and we just, you know, we kind of hurried through, yeah, it.
But for it being like that, it still was a very, very good movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It just, like they said, the only thing I was disappointed with was the CGI at the end with the actual demon.
Yeah.
And it's like, it, with just that, it's still a good movie. If you could just overlook that. I mean, yeah, it's still creepy looking, don't get me wrong.
Well, there were so many little creepy things. Like you were saying, you know, the one thing with the moths and it taking you back to what you had experienced. The one thing that I found that, like, really touched me in this movie was, so the father takes the Dybbuk box from Emma.
Uh-huh.
And Emma has a sense that she can feel it. Well, the father takes the Dybbuk box, and he takes it, he lives in a new development, in like in a cul-de-sac. And he takes the box and throws it in a open-top dumpster.
Yeah.
On a work site somewhere close to where he lives. And the Dybbuk box actually calls to Emma. And she actually comes to retrieve it. And there's a certain item in my life that we won't talk about. But the story from the person that I got it from is that this item literally did keep reappearing and calling to him. And that is how he had it. And so when I saw that the you know, the Dybbuk box was calling her from within the open top dumpster, and she like literally knows exactly where it is, and she climbs up on the side, and she gets it back. I'm like,
yeah,
dead on. Like, you know, it had like, I think it had a lot of traditional lore to it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think that's definitely one thing that it had going for it. And like I said, I loved the reference points that it went through, and it reminded me of certain points. The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
All that. Okay, just like, you know, the demon's name being Azuzu.
Or Abizu.
Abizu.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Exorcist, the demon's name is Pazuzu.
Yeah, Pazuzu.
And
yeah,
so it's kind of cool that, you know, that all happened, and they kind of went through the lore that demon's name end with a U, like Pazuzu and Ibizu, whereas angels and good spirits end with like Gabriel, Azrael, and so yeah, the angels have the L on the end, and the, you know, the demons have the U, and so I kind of like thought that was kind of cool,
yeah,
because it kind of all pulls back together.
Dude, I never even, yeah, because you got Michael, Gabriel,
Bill,
you know,
Azazel, like most angels end with L, Azrael, they all end with A-E-L.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, I think that comes from, you know, obviously the Hebrew origins. I could be wrong, but that's kind of where I believe it, most of it comes from. But yeah, you know, that's when they alluded to the demon's name, I was like, yeah, this seems legit. And it had a lot of good things going for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that parking lot scene where she finds where it calls out to her and she finds it again, and she's kind of having this encounter with the actual spirit in the box. It's saying in Polish if it can live inside of her, if it can take her.
Yeah.
And that's why she's saying no and no. And then eventually, of course, it
wins. It breaks her down, yeah.
And it ends up. And then at the end, of course, you know, they get the spirit's back in the box. He takes it with them.
Modest Yahoo, he's, yeah, on the road. And the family dynamic has returned because obviously, like I said, we all know, you know, the new love interest, he's gone.
He's gone.
He's gone. He's, I told you, man. I told you from like jump that this guy is not coming back. So he's done. So the family dynamic returns to like the happy American family,
yeah,
the 2.5 kids.
Yeah, dude, at that point, You can't be a good dentist no more. You lost your teeth.
Yeah,
How can you be a dentist to me if you lost your teeth?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, you could find, you know, one of your coworkers, you know, give you implants and stuff at a reasonable price.
True, but if somebody comments on your teeth, wow, your teeth are so perfect looking. Well, they're actually
Not mine. Mine actually fell out because my my ex girlfriend's daughter put a dent in it, and all my freaking teeth fell out in the front yard. Nobody gave a crap. So
I would immediately get up from the chair. All right, I need a new dentist.
So
he takes it. Yeah,
he takes it. You know, Suzuki's gone with the Divic box. He's in the wind. And they, you know, Clyde and Stephanie are returning to normal.
Yeah,
life is normal. Yeah, family much. Dynamics back. And Clyde gets a phone call. And it's from Tazok. And he's like, well, you know, how will I know? Clyde gave his BMW up to Tazok.
Dude, how much money you make you just give away your car?
Dude, I'm pretty sure at that point, money was not the concern. I'm pretty sure. He was just like, I got my daughter back, from a demonic force. And this guy, how much could you pay that guy to have, exercised a demon from your daughter?
I guess a BMW would be
so he gave him a BMW. So Tazok is moving with the BMW, and he's driving down the street. And he calls, and he's like, where do I return your car? And Clyde's like, man, you know what? Keep it. Ha. Yeah. You know, he don't care. Like I said, his daughter's safe. That's all that matters. Family's back. He's straight. Well, then Tazok hangs up the phone and he's driving. And he doesn't run a light. He's just driving out. Yeah. And a semi comes out of nowhere and creams him.
Out,
And the whole front end of the BMW is gone. Everything's destroyed. And in the middle of the street on the accident scene is the Divic box laying right there.
Whispering.
Yep. Whispering to its, its new owner and its new host.
Yeah. And it's whispering, actually, whispering a kind of like a Polish lullaby, I guess you could say. Or it would be like Our Ring Around the Rosies.
Huh.
And it's so many mushrooms and the grass sitting is what it says over and over. And it's supposed to be like this kind of like a ring around the rosies. And a lot of people who, speak Polish noticed that, and I bet you it was 1,000 times creepier to them. You know, to us, it's just kind of like a creepy voice that's speaking, obviously, another language. But you hear a nursery rhyme. I guess that's what would be a better term for, is a nursery rhyme.
And a demonic voice.
Yeah, and a demonic voice. Dude, you imagine how, if it was singing Ring Around the Rosie or something like that?
Yeah.
So, that's what it's saying at the end of the movie.
It's almost like the Freddy Krueger. Kind of ties in like that.
Yeah.
And, the pull of, 9-10, never sleep again and all that.
Yeah, this movie was really, really good. And then, like you said, taking it back to the beginning, you know, when the demon's, taking over her, she's a vegan, she's an animal rights activist, so she doesn't eat meat, anything like that. But then the demon is forcing her to eat, raw meat.
Oh, yeah. And one scene, she's, eating all the raw meat and, raw eggs off the floor.
What I like about that scene is they have the little girl crying and eating at the same time. So M is crying because she's being forced to eat, raw meat.
The flesh,
against herself. But then the demon itself is, just hounding away.
Yeah.
That's what I liked, is it would go back and forth with the little girl. Because she's crying through the parts of when she's eating. I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah.
To have that kind of dynamic, that obviously that internal battle and showing it, even if it's just a little part, you might see it oh, dude, she's eating raw meat because she's possessed and this and that. But it's also doing what it's against.
Yeah.
This little girl's
it's defiling the vessel is what it's doing so that it has a place to stay.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, there was just so much good in this movie. And like I said, the only thing is the CGI at the end, but other than that, it was done really well. It was executed very well. I mean, I loved it a lot. And it still has that creep factor.
Yeah, it definitely still had that creep factor. It took me back, like I said, to the movies I saw when I was younger. It took me back to, all your traditional 80s, paranormal films.
Oh, yeah.
It had so much of that, and... I think that's, I think some of that was, basically brought by the fact that, Sam Raimi actually produced the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think some of that came, from him, obviously. I think he came in and, took some of that 80s horror,
Oh, yeah.
Some of that Evil Dead and gave us a little sprinkle on it. So, yeah, I definitely think, It's definitely worth a watch. It's a good movie in the realm of, you know, there's, gosh, man, I don't know how many, just, you know, watching this film, I can't tell you how many, like, tie-ins and possession movies they have. They have possession of everything. It's like possession of Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh, yeah.
possession of Clint Eastwood. It's like, I mean, there's like 100,000 possession movies. And they're all not done really well. I mean, there are ones that hit, there are ones that miss. I think this one actually hit. It had a couple areas, like we said, that it could improve. But I definitely think, you know, if you want a good, you know, kind of scary, think about some demonic things and think about going to that Goodwill Pound store next weekend, this is definitely going to, you know, it's going to put you in the right mood.
You might see that antique, you know,
I definitely won't, but you might.
You see that little, you know, antique statue sitting there. That would look really good next to the fireplace.
Yeah.
Would it, though? Is it worth, is decor worth possession?
Yes.
Some say, yeah, some say, some probably like, you know, yeah, but it just, it makes everything pop around it.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, my daughter's spazzing out upstairs because, you know, the demon's talking.
That's okay, she'll fight through it.
She'll fight through it, but when the neighbors come over.
I'll just call Shava Ranks, man. I got this on deck, bro. Don't even worry about it.
When those neighbors come over, they're going to notice that we have it together in this house. We'll just lock her in the basement when they come over.
Yeah, exactly.
So yes, that is The Possession. Done really, really well. Thank you so much for listening. We will see y'all next week. And please remember to you know, like this podcast, rate it and review it where you can. And yeah, man, just thank you so much. Share it, spread it around so we can keep building it and evolving it. Of course, it won't just be movies. We're doing movies right now. That's pretty much like a good way to start off how we want to do this. And then eventually we'll start kind of doing other stuff here and there.
Absolutely.
And, of course, doing new movie reviews. We got The Terrifier 3 coming up, so
we'll
probably do a review on that one, and I'm excited for that. I know a lot of people hate it. They call it gore porn, but I think it's going to be a really good review.
Yeah.
A modern-day slasher is what we needed.
Yeah.
And I think we got it.
I think it definitely, yeah. I think it definitely meets the criteria of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So we'll get into that. But thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll see you next week.